The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He's a world champion wrestler, best-selling author, actor, and lead singer of Fozzy. Now he's rocking the podcast world.
Yay!
This is Talk Is Jericho. Talk Is Jericho, starring Chris Jericho.
Welcome to Talk Is Jericho, the pot of Honda and rock and roll. Hey! The spell you run down has been broken by Chris Jericho. All right, the remedy for boredom has arrived. The People's Podcast is here. Let's go for a ride. Walk this way in honor of Daryl McDaniels, DMC of Run DMC, the pioneers, the guys who put together the legendary, groundbreaking, trailblazing duet with Aerosmith and Run DMC back in 1986. They did walk this way and created a whole new genre of rock and roll, rap and rock and roll, combining, meeting for the first time ever. I tracked down DMC at the St. Louis Comic Convention. I sat down with him in person, and we had a great conversation. We talked all about Run DMC, how they got started, how they resurrected Aerosmith's career with Walk This Way, the Adidas tracksuits, MTV, comic books, and the role that the comic books played in DMC's lyrics. Not kidding. Wait till you hear all about this. Plus, we talk about the loss, the mysterious death of Jam Master Jay. And, of course, we hit on Daryl's new comic book. Yeah, he's publishing his own comic book series called DMC, and the first issue drops October 29th. But before we get rolling today, I need to say thanks to all of you for doing your Amazon shopping through my links at podcastone.com. It's the easiest way to support this show. Amazon is a proud sponsor of Talk Is Jericho. Every time you shop at Amazon through one of my links, Amazon gives a small percentage of your purchase back to the show to help us cover production costs. I've got links for Amazon USA, Amazon UK, Amazon Canada A. Just go to podcastone.com. Click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page. Then hit the Talk Is Jericho button. You can get a whole bunch of cool stuff at Amazon, anything you want, okay? You can get my new book, The Best in the World, at What? I Have No Idea. It just came out yesterday. You can get Scott Ian's new book, I'm the Man, the story of that guy from Anthrax, which is a great title. A friend of mine, Scott and I's books came out on the same day. If you like heavy metal, go check out his book. He also knows a lot about combining rock and roll and rap music. Go buy DMC's comic book, DMC. Go buy the new Fozzy record, Do You Want to Start a War? Theory of a Dead Man, Savages, their new record. We just finished a tremendous tour with them. So many things you can buy. Go get whatever you want through Amazon, through my link. Remember, it won't cost you anything extra. No hidden fees, no extra charges. If you happen to be doing some shopping on Amazon, you can help out my show. Go to podcastone.com. Click on the Keep Our Podcasts Free banner at the top of the page. Then hit the Talk is Jericho button. You can also bookmark it so you can get to those links in one easy click. All right, I mentioned that the best in the world at what I have no idea is out now. It was number one on the Amazon pre-order charts. Thanks to all of you who ordered it. Thanks to all of you who bought it. Apparently, some bookstore aficionados are saying that the book is selling like hotcakes, and they think it's going to make it on the New York Times bestseller list for sure. Hopefully, it does. If you like a good yarn, definitely want to go check it out. It's got so many great stories from my tours to Iraq, getting stranded in an unsecured war zone that may or may not have still been occupied by Taliban. True story. The whole story between the Y2J Shawn Michaels feud in 2008, one of the greatest feuds of all time and the greatest feud of my career. Stories about the resurrection of Fozzy, traveling on a bus with Anthrax while talking about the Metallica bus crash in 1986 while Fozzy was in a real bus crash at the same time. First meetings with Metallica, hanging out with Ozzy, getting knocked up by Mike Tyson, trying to start an angle with Mickey Rourke and him hiring three bodyguards to kick my ass as a result. Lorne Michaels stories, Bob Barker, Dennis Miller, Shaquille O'Neal, all of these interesting people making cameos, plus from the time when I hosted the Golden Gods Awards, Joe Perry calling me a douche, Zach Wilde calling me a douche. So many great stories in Best in the World at What? I have no idea. Rey Mysterio, one of my favorite angles. CM Punk, another great angle. So if you like the first two books, Lion's Tale and Undisputed, go check out the Best in the World at What? I have no idea. If you want to come get your stuff signed, you can see me tonight at Ridgewood, New Jersey at Bookends. Tomorrow, October 16th, Staten Island, Barnes & Noble in New York. October 17th, Lake Forest Park in the state of Washington. That's in the Seattle area. Third Place Books. October 18th, Fort Lewis and Fort McCord. That's the Seattle, Washington area for our fine military peeps. October 21st in Dallas, Texas at Barnes & Noble Lincoln Park. October 23rd, Brandon, Florida at Books A Million. October 25th in Tampa, Florida at Barnes & Noble in Carrollwood. Plus, I am coming back to the WWE for 1 week. Yes, it is a true story. Vince McMahon himself asked me to come back to help bolster up the UK tour. That's November 10th in Bournemouth, November 11th in Liverpool, November 12th, Newcastle, 13th is Glasgow, 14th is Braunschweig, Germany, and 15th is Frankfurt. So if you're going to be at any of those shows overseas, we'll see you there. And then the Cinder Block Party begins on November 20th in Flint, Michigan with Fozzy, Texas Hippie Coalition, and Shaman's Harvest. If you want to go check out those shows, all dates and ticket information is at FozzyRock.com. All right, today we're talking to Daryl McDaniels, and he is a true blue member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Run DMC was inducted a few years ago, and I wanted to talk about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Last week, they released and announced their nominees. Always causes such a huge, huge brouhaha. This band should be in, that band should be in, this band is not in, that band is not in. I know my good friend Eddie Trunk just loses his mind every year whenever the announcements are made. And this is not even the this is not even the guys that are going in the Hall of Fame. This is just the nominations. So, you know, it's Lou Reed, who is already in with the Velvet Underground, but that's a nominee. Bill Withers, Ain't No Sunshine, Lean On Me, just the two of us. I mean, you know, pretty cool soul singer. Kraftwerk, kind of one of the first, synthesizer, synth pop bands. Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, everybody knows them. NWA, one of the first kind of gangsta rap bands. Green Day was inducted, nominated. Nine Inch Nails, Sting was nominated. The Smiths were put up there. The Paul Butterfield Blues Band, the Spinners, the Marvelettes, Chic, who's been nominated like 25 times, War, same thing. Stevie Ray Vaughan definitely should be in there. So out of those nominees, they'll pick five or six to be inducted. But, I mean, all those bands are deserving in different ways. Some you might think should be in, some you might not think should be in. But the thing I hate the most is the fact that Deep Purple has still not been inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. That drives me absolutely bananas. To me, it's like Randy Savage not being in the WWE Hall of Fame. It cheapens what the Hall of Fame stands for to not have a guy like Randy Savage in, or not have Deep Purple in, you know. And there's a lot of bands that should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame that aren't. Yes is a huge omission. Cheap Trick, Thin Lizzy, Ted Nugent, Def Leppard, Motley Crue, Bon Jovi, Iron Maiden, Judas Priest, Scorpions. I mean, these bands, Journey, are still arena acts to this day. But to me, the three biggest glaring omissions of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame that weren't in until the past few years were Rush, Kiss, and Deep Purple. Now, Rush went in with some resistance from the Hall, even to the point where the Foo Fighters inducted them and wanted to wear the kimonos that Rush used to wear in the 70s. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame said no. Rush stepped in, Geddy Lee and the boys said, no, they're going to wear those kimonos or we're not performing. This is our night now. Then Kiss goes in with the least amount of effort on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame's part, only inducting the original four, not letting anybody play if it wasn't the original four, not letting an all-star band play. Just stupid, stupid stuff. And I was there, I say it time and time again, watching the E Street Band get inducted into a Hall of Fame. And I got nothing against E Street Band. I love Bruce Springsteen. But there's literally 18 guys. There was a guy who was in the band for like 3 months. You know, I played on the first record in 1974. And let me tell you what I've been doing since. Literally, this guy was talking forever. And you got Bruce Kulick, Talk Is Jericho alumni, sitting in the crowd, who played for 14 years with Kiss on over 10 million albums sold, wrote songs, wrote solos in all the videos, did all the tours. He's not allowed in the Hall of Fame. But, you know, Joe John Van Dumpelschmidt from the first lineup of the E Street Band gets in there. Total fallacy. And then now, at least Deep Purple was nominated the last few years. Not even nominated. Like, so ridiculously stupid. Deep Purple, been around since the late 60s. If you're looking at the bands that created heavy metal, you got Zeppelin, Sabbath, and Purple. Okay? And on top of that, Deep Purple wrote the song that every kid who ever picked up a guitar played first, Smoke on the Water. Do you know the song? If you're a musician, you do. Maybe you don't. It goes like this. Bow, 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 now. Wow, 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 wow. Wow, 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 wow. 3, 4. Ow, 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 ow. Wow, 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 wow. Wow, 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 wow. Wow, 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 wow. Okay, you get the point. How that band is not in the Hall of Fame, I don't know what the inner politics are. You know, I asked Lars Ulrich about it. He's a big Deep Purple fan, and he was thinking, well, you know, maybe the rock element was taken up by Nine Inch Nails and Green Day by the 20 people that vote. You know, nobody's happy that Purple's not in. Lars doesn't like it. Eddie Trunk doesn't like it. I don't like it. Rich Ward doesn't like it. Point is, it's the cognoscenti, the powers that be, that just won't put them in there. There should be no vote. Deep Purple's a no-brainer. And same with all those other bands that I mentioned. Listen, I love Green Day. They should probably be in the Hall of Fame. But before Deep Purple, give me a break. Before Cheap Trick, Green Day is like a total Cheap Trick homage band. You know, a Nine Inch Nails, I get it. But I mean, come on, man. There's so many bands that have just been left in the dust by the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And it's all part of the snobbery of Jan Wenner, who runs Rolling Stone magazine, and all of the guys that kind of are on that committee. There's just some real rock and roll snobbery. And I thought maybe when Metallica was inducted years ago, that would open the door to maybe like one metal band a year. You know, and there's plenty of them that deserve to be in there. Yeah, I listed them off earlier. And it just drives me crazy that they're not in there. And even more so, like I said, the most glaring omission, no Deep Purple, and never even mind Maiden and Priest and all those bands. And, you know, Cheap Trick drives me crazy. Journey, I mean, come on. Bon Jovi. I mean, I'm not the biggest Bon Jovi fan, but they're on the side of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame people, I thought. Still playing, you know, stadiums all the time, et cetera, et cetera. So my thing is this. Until Deep Purple gets into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I can't take it seriously. And I don't care if LL Cool J is in or Madonna is in or Flava Flav is in. I mean, Flava Flav is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and Ritchie Blackmore is not. Ritchie Blackmore wrote Smoke on the Water and a thousand other great riffs. And Flava Flav said, yeah, boy! So, I mean, come on. You know, like nothing against Flav. It's a legendary status. It's the cornerstone of what I do here on Talk is Jericho. But, I mean, dude, put Deep Purple in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And please, WWE, put Randy Macho Man Savage in the WWE Hall of Fame. Now, I know there's some politics there. Apparently, Savage won't go in or didn't want to go in without his brother, Lanny Poffo, and his dad, Angelo Poffo. My point is this. Put him in there then. Does it really matter? I mean, I know the Von Erichs went in together, and you had guys like David Von Erich and Chris Von Erich and, you know, Mike Von Erich. They hardly worked. I mean, David Von Erich worked, but never in the WWE. Never even came close to the WWE. He passed away long before that. So, I mean, if you're going to induct families, then just put frickin' the Poffo family in there and get Randy Savage into the WWE Hall of Fame. That's all I'm asking, because until Purple and Savage are inducted into their respective halls of fame, I can't go for that. No can do. I just can't take it seriously. So that's my soapbox speech, if you will. And I'm going to step off the soapbox now. Before we get to DMC, I want to ask you, what'd you guys think of Walking Dead? How brutal was that opening scene? And I know people give me crap sometimes for spoilers on Talk is Jericho, so I won't lay any spoilers on you. I won't tell you what happened in the first scene, even though you should watch it. You should have watched it already. But it is a brutal scene, and it's got nothing to do with zombies. Anybody who sees it knows what I'm talking about. And that show just gets more and more violent, but more and more dramatic, and you just so much intensity, and I just love Walking Dead. Have not seen American Horror Story Freaks yet, Freak Show. I heard the first episode was amazeballs. I can't wait to check that one out as well. Sons of Anarchy coming to a head, and here's my prediction for Sons of Anarchy. In the last episode, Gemma will kill Jax. Yeah, you heard what I said. Gemma will kill her son. I just think she's so evil. She's a total manipulator, and she pulls all the strings and is working everybody against everybody else. And if you had to ask me how it's going to end, people will probably think, well, Jax is gonna blow away his mom. I think Jenna is going to kill Jax. I have no inside information. I know nothing. I'm just saying it, and I think that's my prediction. That's what's going to happen, along with the fact that I think Glenn is going to die on Walking Dead this season at some point. Those are my predictions. That's what I got. If you didn't listen to the Chris Hardwick episode last week, go back and check it out. The Kevin Smith episodes are great. John Morrison, Asa Akira. So many great episodes here on Talk is Jericho, with so many good ones to come, including my guest today, DMC, Daryl McDaniels of Run DMC. Everyone knows Run DMC. Everybody, if you've listened to a song in your life, you know who Run DMC is. Wait to hear the story about how they created basically rap music as we know it.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Talk is Jericho.
All right, with me right now, here in my hotel room in St. Louis, after St. Louis Comic Con, I got DMC, Daryl McDaniel, from Run DMC, one of the pioneers, if not the pioneer, of rap music, and so many other amazing things that you've done. Looking through, kind of refreshing myself on your career, I mean, Run DMC was probably responsible for pioneering a dozen different things that are normal now. You know what I mean? From you know, the heavy rap rock connection to, you know, revitalizing Aerosmith, to be having an endorsement deal, to being the first rap band on Rolling Stone, and MTV doesn't have so much MTV, right? So much stuff. And actually, we're here at the comic convention. You actually now are putting out a comic book, like a graphic novel called DMC, where you are now a superhero, man.
Yes. Because it's funny as you said that a couple of years ago, Rolling Stone magazine did a thing where they was asking people, what do you like about Run DMC?
Right.
And people said, you know, was it their style or was it music? And Chris Rock said, you know, Running Jay was cool, but DMC was like my superhero. The way he looked and the way he sounded and his delivery. So that's one of the reasons I have enough confidence to do a comic book. Because a lot of people, you know, a lot of people in all genres say, man, growing up, you always like a superhero.
Yeah, yeah.
So
well, it
that's
fits.
What brought me in today.
You know, and this, so this is, how did you get the idea? Did you put this together? Is this with Marvel or who is this with?
Well, no. I'm doing it. I'm self-publishing.
Self-publishing. Got it.
Yeah, originally I was going to take it to Marvel or DC, but the people, my friends who coaxed me to do it, it was like, D, when you and Aerosmith got together, what happened? Something good came out of that. Two cultures came together.
That's right,
was positive. Kid Rock says, yo, Run DMC and Aerosmith had a baby. I popped out. Then he asked me, then he said, like you said earlier, he said, yo, what happened when Run DMC got with Adidas? Something good. It was the first non-athletic entity to get an endorsement. And then, you know, that's why a lot of these apparel companies could branch outside of their normal stuff.
Yeah.
So he said, D, you was a kid who loved comics. Before comic books, I went to Catholic school my whole life. I was a straight-A student. I was the so-called nerd.
Yeah.
The geek. But the geeks rule. Let's don't get it twisted.
Geeks have taken over the earth now.
Yeah, so what happened when Marvel Comics was really big to me growing up. And the cool thing about Marvel was it was New York City.
Mm.
You know, they They didn't have fantasy cities.
That's
right. Really New York. Peter Parker was from Queens.
Yeah,
they would show the skyscrapers of New York City, the Brooklyn Bridge, 59th Street.
Stan Lee is a New Yorker.
Exactly.
Right.
So that was my whole childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happened, me and my brother, we had this big collection of comic books, Hulk, Spider-Man, Iron Man. But this thing called hip-hop comes over the bridge from the Bronx. I wasn't a drug dealer.
Mm-hmm.
I was a school kid.
Mm-hmm.
So me and my brother had to figure out how we going to get money to get turntables and a mixer and some records. No, please, no. Yeah, we got to sell some comic books. So I sold my comic books and picked up the microphone.
And look what happened with that.
And look what happened
But this is exciting because now you brought it back full circle. I mean, I'm looking at the art for this. You said this is kind of like the EP for it.
Yeah.
It's great art. Now, did you write the story for this?
Yeah, we come up with all the storylines. Cool. And then we get real writers. We have writers that have worked with Marvel Comics, DC. All the writers and artists as part of this book is authentic players in the comic book world. Because I don't want to disrespect the culture.
Yeah.
I want to celebrate the culture.
Right.
I want to give a tribute to the culture.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And if you listen to all my early music, I was a kid. I stayed in my house. I watched a lot of WWE. Bruno Sammartino was one of my heroes. Andre the Giant. So growing up for me, it was comic books, it was Bruce Lee, it was school, and this thing called hip-hop comes over the bridge. Now, I didn't want to get up in front of a lot of people to rhyme. When Joseph Simmons, Russell Simmons' younger brother, was DJ Run, Russell was going to give him a record deal. He didn't want to be by himself. So he knew this kid, DMC, got a great imagination. He's a smart kid, plus he writes a lot of rhymes. So he looked at me and said, D, when Russell lets me make a record, I'm putting you in my group. And I'm 17, 16, 17 years old. It goes in one ear out the other. But when I graduated from high school, the phone rings. It's Joseph Simmons. Yo, Daryl, grab your round books. We're going to the studio. So when we went to the studio, where did my confidence come from?
Mm-hmm.
I thought, man, okay, I'm hearing this beat. What would the Hulk do? Crash through walls, come through floors, bust through ceilings, and then knock down doors. Superheroes was the Amazing Spider-Man, the Invincible Iron, Incredible Hulk. So I became the Devastating Mind Controller DMC, and can't nobody mess around with me. I'm the king of rock, rap, and of rhyme. So that whole childhood make-believe world became a reality for me.
That's interesting, man, because it's funny because it's amazing the combination between music and comic books and even wrestling in there too, because I know as a kid I loved wrestling because of the superhero element of it.
They were your heroes.
I love Kiss for that reason too. Kiss were real life superheroes.
That's
you know,
huge.
They're wearing costumes and makeup, you know, and
yeah, so many people in the music business, as for the people who don't like Kiss,
yeah,
so many musicians
sure
famous, successful, incredible talent, say, man, when I saw Kiss,
yeah,
that's what gave me this.
Right. And even going other than just to rock and roll, like if you're going in the early 80s with David Lee Roth, I mean, that guy was a larger-than-life persona, another superhero.
Yeah, so, they were superheroes. Right. And that's, the musicians are superheroes.
Yeah, and it's funny that you kind of had that vibe. Now, you were mentioning, I mean, when you first heard this from Joseph Simmons about you mentioned that hip-hop came from over the bridge.
Right, because it started in the Bronx.
Hip-hop did exist to a certain extent at that point in time, like Grandmaster Flash and Sugar Hill Gang and that sort of thing.
Before records,
yeah,
they used to do – what we used to do was I'd be like, yo, Chris, go home and get your mother's receiver hi-fi turntable. I'll go home and get my mother's receiver. Eric, yo, Biscuit, go get – so we would take all the amps and the receivers because we needed power. Mm-hmm. We would take the two turntables and it was disco. Disco – hip-hop was a hybrid of disco. Mm. Play the records and everybody come and dance. But we used to build our own sound systems. So we couldn't get into Studio 54. We couldn't get into Zanzibar. Hip hop, when people started saying disco is dead, when disco was dying, hip hop was emerging. If you listen to all the Rapper's Delight, Good Times, we rapped over a lot of disco records because disco records had long breaks.
Yeah.
But what happened was we would take our sound systems to the park, bust the light poles open, and we would DJ, and we would, it wasn't rap, it wasn't even hip hop yet. We would just use the break beats, and we would say our raps about how good we were. My DJ's better than your DJ. I'm the best MC in the world. But then eventually, once it got off, somebody, Sugar Hill Records, basically said, wow, we could put this on records. And that Rapper's Delight was the beginning of it. But Rapper's Delight wasn't really authentic because once Rapper's Delight happened, we started realizing we could talk about what we really do. Mm. And that's, and you got to understand something. We didn't just sample the rock and roll that we stole. Mm-hmm. We looked at what Bob Dylan did. Wow. He really made some socially relevant statements. We looked at what Fogerty did. We looked at what the John Lennon and all the Neil Young, they would address the issues, the Vietnam War.
Yeah, sure.
Marvin Gaye, civil rights, the economy.
John Lennon too, yeah.
Yeah, so we realized, wow, you don't just be a musician. You be a voice for your people. Mm-hmm. And that's when Run DMC came along. Our first record was It's Like That and That's the Way It Is. Mm-hmm. And we talked about the world. But It's Like That and That's the Way It Is came after the message.
Right.
You know, message was broken glass everywhere. Don't push me. I mean, that record was young people, but it was like rock and roll. It spoke for your father who was working 9 to 5 and struggling. And that's where the whole essence of it came from. So when it came over the bridge, it was almost like when you would put on your cape and pretend to be Superman. Mm-hmm. We would take pencils and pens, write rhymes, and pretend we was Grandmaster Flash and Afro Bambaataa, because those were our idols on record. So after me sitting in my basement from 8th grade to the end of 9th grade, stacks and stacks of rhyme books, Run said, there's something in this kid that I could use. So that's why he was confident enough to call me. And remember, what I'm trying to say is, my whole MC, DMC fantasy was just pretend.
You're playing a character.
Right.
Yeah.
But then Run really made me go do this thing that I was pretending to be.
So how were you able to kind of, I mean, first of all, then how did Jam Master Jay get involved? Because you started as a duo.
Right. We made a record. We made a single.
Uh-huh.
We made the first single. Russell, Run's brother, took it to every record company in New York. Because you got to understand something. Rapper's Delight was hugely popular.
To the mainstream, too? Rapper's Delight?
Okay.
It was a legitimate hit.
Right. Okay. Rapper's Delight was a hit. Okay. It was grown-ups started to know about it.
Yeah.
Even though they said hip-hop's a fad, it won't be here. It was the new, this hip-hop thing was the new disco.
Right.
Disco was dying. You know, disco was great. Donna Summer, the Four Tops, even the Rolling Stones did Miss You.
Everybody Kiss.
Everybody was
Kinks,
trying to
Kinks, everybody had.
They even said Queen was doing disco. Another one, boom, boom, boom. Another one, Bites the Dust. We used to freestyle over that. So everybody was doing disco, but then it just got to the point where disco sucked.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
It got oversaturated like every other type of musical genre.
Exactly.
Happened to rock and roll, happened to rap.
That was happening with hip-hop. And then, you know, when Russell went out there, the message had already been a huge success. Planet Rock was a huge success. Rappers of Light was a huge success. So Russell takes our music to every record label in New York City, turned us down. Why? There's no music on it. Because our music, it's like that. It was just drums.
It was just a beat and a rap.
And the rapping. And you know what? Sucker MCs was just the beat and the rap. But even it's like that was doom, that doom, that doom, doom, that doom, with a blend. That, it just had a blend.
Whack. Yeah.
So all the major labels, Curtis Blow, by the way, Curtis Blow, Christmas rapping, and these are the breaks. Bring it up, bring it up, bring it up. Curtis Blow was the first rapper ever to be signed to a major label.
Hmm.
So Russell goes to his label. No, there's no music. He went to every major label in New York City. They turned us down. He went to a little label called Profile Records. Corey Robbins, Steve Plotnicki, they borrowed money from their parents to start the label. Russell goes in and plays our music, and because it was different, they said, what do we got to lose? You got to be bold enough to take a chance.
Absolutely. It's the same thing that happened with the Beatles. They got turned down by 22 record labels until Decca finally signed them. Yeah, it's the same story. The Beatles.
Really?
Run DMC, some of the biggest bands of all time.
Really?
Turned down because you were doing something different, man.
Really? And I didn't know.
Yeah.
People call us the Beatles of rap.
Well, absolutely. You know how show business is.
Mm-hmm.
The companies go with what's
hot.
And no one wants to take a chance.
They'll say, we love what you're doing, Chris,
right,
but could you do more of this?
And then someone takes a chance, and then suddenly all the record companies are like, we want to Run DMC.
Right.
Get us one, you know?
So that happened to the Beatles?
Yeah, man. It's a famous... It might not have been 22, but it was...
Wow.
Tons of record companies
That's
turned them
crazy.
Down.
That's crazy. Well, that happened to us, and the Profile Records took a chance with us, and we put out our... We recorded the first album. We got the deal. After we got the deal, we realized something. Oh, man, we ain't got a DJ to play the music for us while we rap.
Yeah.
So Jason Marcel's Air Master J, he was probably the best DJ that did the block parties in the neighborhood.
Okay.
So we went to Jay. You know, Run went to Jay. Jason, me and Daryl McDaniels, you got to understand, this is way before we even thinking of being this thing called Run DMC. Me and Daryl McDaniels formed this group called Run DMC. We need a DJ to play our records for us. So Jay said this. Hold up. You mean to tell me I can DJ like I do in the park for free and get paid for it? I'm in.
Yeah.
And that was the beginning of Run DMC.
Did you ever consider changing the name to incorporate him? Like,
well,
Run JMC or something like
that? Yeah, no. Originally, we wanted to be, because remember in the beginning, it was the Treacherous Three.
Yeah.
Cold Crush Four, Fearless Four, Furious Five.
Yeah, the numbers, right.
We didn't want to be Run DMC. It's funny that you, and me and Run cried when Russell said, hold up, you're DJ Run. He's DMC, those initials of his name. Yo, it sounds so good now. See, it don't.
Of course.
It's not
going to
give you the right of it. Run DMC. When we first heard we was, Russell, we don't want to be Run DMC. That's the worst name ever.
Dude, trust me, I'm in a band called Fozzy. You first heard that, so what are we doing?
No people then, see
or,
you start
or Limp Bizkit or Kiss or Metallica or Red Hot Chili Peppers. Def Leppard.
Okay.
Think about that. Def Leppard.
Queen.
It's Queen, right.
I get it. Okay, so it's all the same thing.
That's right.
So
that's right.
It happened to us, it happened to you.
Absolutely.
But we wanted to be the Dynamic Three.
The Assassins or
you
something.
You know, something, right. Exactly. You know, the dangerous, you know,
yeah,
the treacherous
trio.
Yeah, something like that. And it was like he wanted us to be Run DMC. But that's
so that was
why,
Russell Simmons' idea.
Yeah, to be
now
Run
Russell
DMC.
Simmons went on, just for my listeners, went
yes.
on to become the head of Def Jam America, Def Jam Records, basically one of the biggest hip hop moguls
started
of all time.
Yeah.
Started
exactly,
right. So,
there was no Puffy, no Jay-Z.
Right, it was Russell Simmons,
Russell.
Yes.
So we get this deal with this first single. Put the first single out, it does well.
Mm-hmm.
So then Russell says, you're going to make another single. So we actually took Curtis Blow had did an album that had Christmas rapping and the breaks and all of this. Had this one song on it called Hard Times. Now, in the beginning, it's just like you said, the labels go for what's hot. When The Message was a big record, if you go back to that early period of hip-hop, you had The Message 1, Message 2, Life in the Ghetto, Growing Up in the Ghetto, My Dad's from the Ghetto, The Ghetto's a Hard Place. You had all these records saying how bad the ghetto was. So Russell was like, we're going to take Curtis Blow's record Hard Times, and we're going to make it like it's like that. So we did the record Hard Times, spreading just like the flu. Watch out, homeboy, don't let it catch you. You got your pockets, prices going up, got your pockets going down. If you got short money, you're stuck on the ground. Turn around, get ready, keep your eye on the clock, and be on point for the future shock. hard times, tactum. Same thing, you know, same
with a heavy beat behind it.
Yeah, heavy beat with the breathing on it.
Yeah, that's another trademark Run DMC, breathing, yeah.
Yeah, heavy breathing, in the hoods. But then people was getting confused. They was like, because there was no videos in. There was no album covers. So they was like, originally people thought we was a funk band. Because Cameo, Confunction, the Barcades. If you listen to Suck'em C's 2 years ago with the beat, that's rap. But it's like that, and Hard Times was kind of like, you could picture a band playing it. Unemployment at a record. Remember Funk Confunction and the Barcades and Cameo came along? So people was like, okay, Run DMC must be a nine-piece funk band. Nobody had no idea what the hell this was. So we said, yo, people know it's no, people didn't even know it was two rappers. They thought it was three rappers.
Okay.
Because they couldn't tell what voice and who was doing what till they saw us. So once people started seeing us, they would always ask, who's the guy in the back with the turntables? So we did Hard Times, and then we did a record called Jam Master J. J-A-Y, all the letters of his name. Cutting and scratching all that, because we had to explain.
Who he was, yeah.
Right, and what he's doing.
Yeah.
Because it was different. People used to look at us and say, where the band at?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, the guy's playing records. Because, they know of a disco DJ.
But not like this.
They didn't know of a group. Right.
Yeah. Once again, one of the first bands, if not the first, to have a DJ would be Run DMC.
Right. To have the DJ. We did shows. This is crazy. Rest in peace. We did shows with Marvin Gaye.
Oh, wow.
We had
really?
20 minutes. On tour.
No kidding.
Playing at Coliseums and
how did you get that gig?
Our record was on the same stations. Our records was playing on all these R&B stations.
Gotcha.
We was out on R&B charts. The Urban Heart R&B charts. And Marvin Gaye. It was crazy. Our music came out. And the promoters and their management was like, we got to get on this first. Marvin, we need these guys to open up to you. Because it was exposing Marvin to a whole nother
audience,
demographic,
right.
too.
Absolutely.
So it was working. We thought it was because we were so good. No, they was using us, which is cool. But we opened for Marvin Gaye. We opened for George Clinton.
Wow.
But the crazy thing was, we did that year. We opened for Marvin Gaye. Then Russell goes, y'all got to do an album. So we recorded. The first album was self-titled Run DMC. But that was on the album where we said, yo, people are using the disco breakbeats. They're using the funk breakbeats. They're using the R&B breakbeats. And they're using the jazz breakbeats.
Mm.
Nobody's using the rock breakbeats. Mm. Because before rap records was ever, if you went to the park and you're the DJ, in your crate was Queen, Aerosmith, Billy Squire, Kiss and the Rolling Stones. And we would look through those records for any place where the beat and the guitar was just going for a little bit. That's what the DJ had to keep going. Mm. So when we did the first album, it had It's Like That, Suck'em C's, Hard Times, Jam Master J, a couple of other songs. But then we said, yo, let's make a record and put the guitars on it. So we did the song Rock Box.
Yeah.
People think Walk This Way is the first rock rap record. I'll get a tongue twister here. The first rock rap record wasn't Walk This Way. The first rock rap record was Rock Box, which was the first rap record on MTV.
Say that three times fast.
I know. And that got us on MTV. Then we did King of Rock with Larry Bud Melman from the David Letterman Show. Now you gotta understand, we don't know who, so we kids.
Yeah.
So the label's bringing all of these.
Get some old white guy.
Yeah, in the first video, we have Professor Irwin Corey.
Who's that?
Remember Professor Irwin Corey? He was this comedian.
Movies. Yeah.
If you look at, there's a scene in the movie Car Wash with a P, and they think it's a bomb. He did commercials. He did stand. He was a stand-up comedian. Crazy hair.
I remember.
You know who? Him, you know this guy. He was first. Then we had Larry Bud Melman. From the David Letterman Show. And the reason why we did King of Rock, because that's when people started saying, this rap music's a fad. These guys won't be here so long. So instead of saying we're the kings of rap, we just... And the funny thing is, Lou Reed, Bon Jovi, the Ramones, Debbie Harry. Remember Debbie Harry made a rap record?
Oh, yeah.
Rapture.
Yeah, Rapture. Blondie.
Fab Freddy. Yeah. Right at that time, 85, punk rock was when we would do our shows around DMC and the Beastie Boys, the Ramones was in the audience. Lou Reed and them all was in the audience. So when they started saying rap was a fad or whatever, we just made a bold statement, we're the kings of rock, which got a lot of people attention. Now the critics and the journalists was like, how do these guys have the balls? This is blasphemy. What the hell are they doing saying this? But Lou Reed and all these guys saw themselves in us.
They got it, yeah.
You know, they caught it. And that was that was the whole first early beginning of it, which led to the Walk This Way thing in 86.
Well, at that point, though, like you said, you guys started having almost a gimmick, we call it in wrestling, or
yeah,
superhero.
Yeah.
You wore the track suits. I mean, the one thing we're talking about DMC being a superhero, you said Chris Rock, you always had the glasses.
The glasses!
Everyone knew that the guy with the glasses is DMC. I know that.
They know,
I'm not sure which guy is Jay or which guy is Ron, but the glasses guy, I know that guy, you know?
Yes,
I mean, that was like your gimmick, you know?
That was my gimmick,
and
yeah.
The hats, and then, of course.
Ron used to be, man, I'm so jealous everybody always know you, but it was a costume.
Yeah.
My first publicist said, it was amazing to sit around Daryl, this Catholic school kid from suburban, lower middle class Queens. See, he wasn't from the Bronx and Harlem.
Uh-huh.
You know, in the 80s, Bronx and Harlem was a drug-filled, gang-filled war zone. We was from the Queens. I lived in a house. We had a fence around. My father mowed the lawn. We had a dog in the backyard. I had a basketball court. The kids in the Bronx and Harlem didn't have that. But Bill, my first publicist, Bill Atlas, said it was amazing to see this mild-mannered, straight-A Catholic school kid transform glasses, hat, gold chain, Adidas suits, and Adidas with no laces. Into the mighty DMC.
There's another one. No laces as well. That was
was identified. It was part of the whole.
That you guys had a look. Now, is that what was it that finally took you guys? We mentioned earlier having the first gold record for a rap band, then platinum, then being an American Bandstand.
Yeah, we're hanging with Dick Hart.
Rolling Stone magazine cover. What was it that took you to get to that level? What pushed you guys over the cliff? It was Kings of Rock. What really started to do that? Or was it Rockbox?
It was Rockbox.
Yeah.
You know what? It was MTV. It was Rockbox getting on MTV.
It's hard.
MTV.
They ruled the world back then.
Yeah. MTV was. We probably would have did something eventually.
Yeah.
But because of MTV, you turn it on. What the hell is this? What the hell? Yeah. They're running. They got guitars and Adidas and the little white kids running through the club. And the guys using the tent. Then you're seeing Madonna and you're seeing Michael and you're seeing, there's so much talent at that time. You're seeing Bowie.
Everybody.
You're seeing Van Halen. You're seeing Cher.
It's funny. I was just watching. And I didn't know this till I did some research.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching the Live Aid DVDs just a few days ago. Just remembering how amazing. There was so many Hall of Famers.
That was MTV.
But you guys were on that.
And you know,
I never knew that. That was like the first rap band to ever be on such a huge stage.
No, that was scary, though.
Was that in Philly?
That was scary. Yeah. That was at was it DC?
I think it was Philly. RFK Stadium. That's
I don't know where
Philly.
Where
I think it is. Yeah.
See, that was scary. We was on tour and they called Bill Graham.
Yep,
the
famous
promoter. We on tour. Not can we just want to rhyme and do our hip hop thing? In the middle of the tour, they go. Matter of fact, we was doing a show in DC the night before. We had to
there
go to
you
Philly.
Go.
That's what we're. And they say, Bill Graham, who's that? Oh, you don't know Bill. San Francisco and the
U.S. Legendary.
Legendary. He personally requested us to be on the show.
And he was an older guy. He must have had his ear to the ground of
he
what
had
was cool.
Ear to the streets.
Wow.
This new thing going on. All the musicians are talking about Run DMC.
Now everybody's there. You got Queen, McCartney, Mick Jagger, The Who.
I mean,
all the big bands at the time, Duran Duran and Bob Dylan.
I didn't want to say hi to none of them.
You're scared,
right?
They're
going to disrespect. This is crazy.
How did the crowd take you that day?
It was 70. No, let me not give us that much. It was 60-40.
Okay. And you're dealing with a crowd of about 80,000 people.
No, right. 60-40.
Yeah.
So it was, but also boo.
What the hell is this?
Yeah. And that happened a lot. The truth is, it's funny. Another guy, rest in peace, Lou Reed.
Yes.
When we put Rockbox out, Lou Reed had us open for him in New York in a village somewhere, downtown, on a scene. When we came out, 80% kind of knew about they heard the singles and They knew this Run DMC, but 20%? Middle fingers up the whole... We got to the point where we looked at, should we leave? Says, not a show must go on. I'm talking about re-rhyming. I couldn't wait to demonstrate all the Super Death rhymes that boo! Boo you, DMC! You, DMC! I'm rhyming in the middle. DMC, 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 look at me! You, boo! The whole show.
And see, that's one reason why it's bad that people knew which one was DMC.
Right.
That's when you want to take your glasses off.
Right. Get the one we know how to his name.
Yeah, that's
and it was
right.
Just like crazy. But the cool thing is, Lou Reed comes on for his set and said, I just want to address those people that's booing them.
Mm-hmm.
Here's why I put them on the show. I see myself in them. I started like that as a kid. Listening to the Beatles and listening to the guys that came before me, listening to the blues. I'm trying to figure it out. And he's like, wow. And Lou Reed's people, you know, the whole staff, oh my God, that's huge. You know, we didn't really know who Lou Reed was. But yeah. It must be there. That's huge. You know, Mr. Reed out there giving him credit. He's like, wow. But it was scary. Live Aid was totally scary. Like this, it was scary.
Wow.
It was almost like, you know, we coming up. We getting on radio. We start, like I'm saying, we're starting to open for bands and stuff like that. But it's still like we was protected in our own world.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now we coming into this big world.
You're playing with the big boys now.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
There are over 75 million monthly Tubi viewers. That's more people than there are influencers on the internet. Which means Tubi is more popular than sponsored posts for digestive enzymes and high coverage foundation. More popular than soft launching your boyfriend. More popular than making boomers explode with rage when you tell them how much you make on a single post. Tubi, it's more popular than influencers. See you in there.
This is Talk is Jericho.
Welcome back to Talk is Jericho. I got DMC sitting across the table for me. So many great stories you've already told, man. I'm just sitting here like in awe about all these great things. But let's talk about what really busted open Run DMC to the next level and basically created, you know, we mentioned there was other people that were doing it, but mm-hmm. basically started the whole rap rock phenomenon, and more importantly, mm-hmm. resurrected the dead career of Aerosmith. Funny, Aerosmith was dead at that point in time. They were trying to make a little bit of a comeback, but they had nothing going on. How did you guys come up with the idea of doing Walk This Way, and how did you approach Aerosmith in getting them to understand what you had to offer?
Oh, wow, that's a great question.
I'm sure it's
everybody says we brought him back.
Well, you did. If you look at what happened with them, I mean, because Joe Perry and Brad Whitford left the band in about 80. A lot
right.
of drug problems. They
right,
got back
right,
together in
that.
84, 85. They did one kind of lukewarm record. And then suddenly, boom, here it comes.
Right. Well, what happened was this. We was working on a Raising Hell album. We was already probably 6 or 7 records in. Mm-hmm. I remember when I said earlier, you know, in the DJ's crate, it was, you know, Aerosmith, Queen,
yeah.
whatever. We didn't know the song was Walk This Way because Jay would never let the record play that far because when the guitars was getting ready to end, just when Steven was about to sing, Jay would go back to the front of the record. So me and Run never heard the lyrics. We just knew, get toy. We knew the name of the right. We knew the album and Back to the Beginning.
Yeah.
We knew the album was Toys in the Attic. I had no idea what the name of the record was. Jay's a DJ. So I was like, yo, Jay, on this album, let's sample Toys in the Attic. I didn't say
which is what you called it. Hey, yeah.
Yo, let's sample Toys in the Attic and make a song out of it. So cool. So Jay takes the Toys in the Attic. He's looping it.
Right.
Sampling it. It was going to go. And just keep that
yeah.
going. Rick Rubin.
Right. We have to talk about the influence of Rick Rubin
yes.
on Run DMC as well.
Rick Rubin, Johnny Cash, Run DMC, Chili Peppers,
the biggest producer in the world. Metallica. You know, everybody's involved with
Shanker,
that.
Shanker,
yeah.
Lincoln.
Black Sabbath records.
Black Sabbath, yes.
AC/DC, yeah.
People know who Rick Rubin
right.
is. So he was producing us at that time. He comes in the studio.
Because he was just an up-and-comer at that point in time, too,
well,
right?
Yeah, yeah. We met him through the Beastie Boys. The Beastie Boys was a punk rock group.
Oh, okay.
They had that record called Cookie Puss.
Uh-huh.
Back in 80-something. So Rick was, funny thing, Rick was their DJ.
Really?
At the time. Yeah.
Of course, he's a white guy in a white rap band, which was probably even less received than a black rap band.
Exactly. Yeah.
They had it worse than you guys
did. Yeah, well, right. Exactly. And, you know, I remember the day Rick came in with the Beastie Boys and said, "You think these guys could rap?" Now, this is before they was into Buddhism and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
We looked at them and say, look, the way they act, they could do anything that they want. But so that's how we met Rick. We was working in the same studio, so we became friends, and he had a great knowledge of rock.
Uh-huh.
Because we was trying to sample, It's Tricky, we're sampling My Sharona.
Yeah, that's right.
And it didn't sound right the way he was doing it. He said, no, don't just sample it. Play the real guitar over it. Mary was the monkey.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Mary, man, yeah. Where are you?
Why
are
you bugging?
So he made that into...
Yeah, okay.
That's because he was that dude.
Yeah.
He was guitarist. He knew the history of it. Mm. We didn't know... We just knew these were breakbeats. Yeah. He knew the history. So he comes in and he goes, guys, that's how Rick talked. Do you know who that is? So me and Jay's like, yeah, it's Toys in the Attic. No. This is Aerosmith. And he says what you just said to me. They were gone, history, they're from Boston, whole thing. So we looking at him like this. And he goes like this. He says, you know what? It would be great if y'all did the record over. So we're thinking from hip-hop standard. What the hell you think we're going to do? We're going to sample it, and we're going to rhyme. We're going to do it over. I'm a rhyme. I'm DMC in a place to be, the best MC in history. Been rhyming on a mic since 83. There will never be an MC better than me. And then run go.
He
said, no. This is Rick. No. Do the record as is, the way they made it. Me and Run was like, what you talking about, Rick? Jay was like, wow. That, rest in peace, Jay. He was a visionary.
Yeah.
Jay was like, wow.
He got it.
That's never been done before. And me and Run turned to Jay. Jay, what you taking sides?
And you're on his team?
Because me and Run is like, oh, no, we're going to rhyme.
Yeah.
So Rick takes the record off the turntable. Gives it to me, gives us a pen and pad, go in D's basement, put the record on the turntable, let it play.
Yeah.
Sit there, write the lyrics out, and come back to the studio and do them. So we go down in my basement, true story. I put the needle on the record. It goes, and it plays. Backstroke Lugger, Stephen Lyric. Come on, we get on the phone. Oh, hell no! This is hillbilly gibberish. You trying to ruin our career. Africa Bambaataa and the Zulu Nation is going to hate us. Flashing them. I mean, we going off.
You thought the lyrics were crap.
Right. And that went on for like probably 10 minutes.
Wow.
Oh, no, we're not doing this. We're rhyming. No, you're going to Russell, Run's brother. You're going to do it. Jay's telling him, stop screaming at him, Russell, and talk to him, and this and that. So, made a long story short, we said, no, we ain't doing it like that. Hung up the phone. For 6 hours, me and Run sat in my basement. Phone rang and say, yo, Run, I'm telling you, pick it up. He goes, no, you pick it up. You pick it up for 6 hours. You pick it up. So, finally, I pick up the phone. It's Jay. Guys, you hear Russell screaming in the background, this and that. Jay said, just write the record and don't worry about it. Hang up the phone. So me and Run, we sat there, we listened to the record. If you listen to their version and our version, we get two words wrong. There's two sections wrong.
Okay.
Steven says, oh, hey, diddy, diddy, with your kitty in the middle. We say, hey, diddle, diddle, with your kitty in the middle. And there's another word that we didn't know, right.
You
listen.
You can't go online and look up the lyrics of this. Right. You just have to listen to it. Yeah.
So we got the records. But me and Ron's whole thing is, okay, we're kids. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to write, but we ain't doing it. So a couple of days go by. Jay calls up. Yo, y'all got to come to the studio. Sunday, if it's a Sunday morning, y'all got to come to the studio. Me and Ron, but Jason, man, this is hillbilly music. You're going to ruin it. He said, calm down. Listen to this. And Jay's be like, what's going on in there? Jay goes, Rick done called Boston and brought Joe Steven Tyler and Joe Perry here. And Jay just said these words to us because he's trying to edge us on. Yo, and Steve is in here kicking your asses. And then me and Ron still going, but Jason, that's not rapping. And Jay says, slow down. Jay goes, don't do the record the way Steve sung it. Because if you listen to it, this is Jay. If you listen to it, he's still rapping. See, he saw swinging.
Oh, yeah. Stopping,
same thing.
That's right.
He said, don't do it like Steve because y'all don't sing. Do it like Run DMC would do it.
What do you mean?
Just take a word each. What y'all known for? Honey, switch off. Switch. Okay, go to the studio. We laid it. Sat back and listened to it. Everybody got happy. That's why at the end, when Steve takes the end verse, Steve watched what we did and said, ooh, Steve was like a kid. He was like, ooh, can you do the ad-lib thing over my phone? That's why at the end,
yeah.
Seat level, we come on with him.
Cover.
He was like, this is cool.
He
Joe
got
Perry,
it.
Steve, the whole thing, the whole session, Steve was like a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, can I DJ? Ooh, can I rhyme? Ooh, let me do this. Joe Perry did this the whole session. Joe, you all right?
Just sat there, yeah.
No, Joe, you all right? You hungry, Joe? Want something to eat?
Just shaking his head.
Play? Joe, you ready to play? He walked in there. His guitar tech came, put the guitar in his hand. He had the cigarette hanging. He looked up, said, hit tape.
And railed it. Yeah.
It's amazing to see musicians.
See, but the thing is, they got it. They understood what was going on. Because you could see it on their end going, no, we're not doing this. This is our classic tune.
No, they put more energy into it than we did.
Did you think they knew that it was going to give them a kick in the ass to be involved with you guys? Like, you guys were big at that at that point.
Well, Rick said when he called, I think they took it as a roll of a dice because our joke was this. After they really did it, Rick said, yo, they could have made a record with God and people would have hated it. Steve Aerosmith could have made the best rock record ever made in the history of the universe. And people would have said, no, it's fake. But what happened, Rick said he calls and the guy picks up the phone. Hi, I'm Rick Rubin. I'm producing a rap group called Run DMC and we want to do your record over. Is anybody I could talk to? Hold on. Hey guys, there's some guy on the phone. Rick Rubin says, Run DMC is a rap. Y'all know, yeah, we kind of know it, but what do y'all want to do? Steve's management said it was one of those things where, fuck it, it can't hurt.
Yeah, right. What else do we got right now?
Right.
Yeah, right.
And they came, like when we did it, one thing I can say about them, they made me and Run step up. Because it was their record. I think that's why I want to. It wasn't, I think. If we would have sampled it and did it the way I said we was going to do it, I probably wouldn't be sitting here talking.
Yeah.
Because we did a remake of we didn't throw up gang signs, we didn't bitches and hoes, we didn't smoke no weed, we did the record over. So when their audience heard it, they took it as a tribute.
Absolutely.
You didn't ruin it.
No, see, being, I grew up in Canada, in Winnipeg, and I was a rock kid. Didn't know much about rap other than what we were starting to hear. And that song came on, like, this is cool. Everybody loved it. And I wasn't even a big Aerosmith fan, but that made me want.
A lot of people said,
you know,
that. A lot of people said.
Yeah, that. And I remember vividly the video, and I'm sure you guys did this on purpose, but when Steve finally knocks down the wall between you,
that was all
symbolic.
Right.
It's knocking down the wall.
Director, John Small.
It's knocking down the wall really between rock and roll. And after that, then suddenly Anthrax does it for metal. And suddenly then it became a thing. Like, this is cool. We welcome this.
Exactly. All the kids that was listening to metal
knew
they didn't have to be mad at their friend telling them, listen
That's
to
right.
this. At first, they didn't want to listen to it.
Yes.
Keep it separate.
Absolutely.
That's the greatest way to explain it.
Sure it is.
That's what actually happened.
And Ruben did it again with Beastie Boys' No Sleep to Brooklyn when he had Kerry King.
Kerry King
from Slayer played the solo. So it's like, okay, well, we got it.
Well, the funny thing is Slayer, the Beastie Boys, Run DMC, LL Cool J, Public Enemy, the Bomb Squad, all of those people was using this one studio called Chunking House of Metal. So we was already in the mix. Hey,
what's up, man? Yeah,
but we never came together. Walked This Way brought us together.
Now, that was a huge hit. That must have just taken you guys to a
different
level.
Yeah, that was. People asked me, when did you know? You know, getting MTV was a big thing, but I didn't stay in it. I was a kid. I didn't stay in the house to watch MTV.
Right.
So, you know, when we got on MTV, Russell and the label was like, oh, my God. You know, when we was able to get Larry Bud Melman and when we did King of Rock and, you know, we was getting this radio plate now. We was in there. We was opening for these bands. But to us, it was just, we're not rapping in the park no more. We're rapping at, rapping at Roseland now.
That's right. That's right.
But Walk This Way was like, oh, shoot, something's happening here. So something's happening here.
So when that took off, and then the Beasties were getting pretty popular too. You guys went on tour together, Beastie Boys and Run DMC. Yeah. How was that? Like the white rap group and the black rap group.
It was crazy because the first thing was, there's no way these black hip-hop guys is going to get with these white punk rock guys, and something's going to happen. But every venue. That's, you know, at first, when we was coming out from Rockbox to King of Rock before Raising Hell, it probably was 15% white.
Mm-hmm.
I'm today at Comic-Con, mm-hmm. I met grown men saying, when y'all played in Cincinnati, my brother was a fireman who got to work the spotlights for the tour, was running MC, LL Cool J, the BCs or whatever. And he said it was easy to find me with the spotlight in the front row because I was only one of the 15 white guys in there. Because he said, yeah, I said, brother, how'd you do that? Duh. But when Run DMC and the BCs started going on tour, it started becoming 50-50.
Yeah.
It started becoming 50-50. So you had the punk rock audience. You had the kids that was listening to Metallica.
Mm-hmm.
You had the kids that was listening to Bon Jovi.
Right.
You had the kids that was following Blondie and the Ramones. All kind of, and the people listening to Grandmaster Flash, all
yeah.
coming to the concerts now. And that's when we started saying, yo, something going on here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the Raising Hell album came out. We went on tour. But what really took it to the next level was the big gang fight in Long Beach, California.
What was that? What happened?
We went on a Raising Hell tour. Everything was cool. Run MC, the BCs, LL Cool J, and Houdini. When we got to Long Beach, California, but it died quick because it didn't stick in the media, but it kind of brought more attention to us because now people look.
What happened in Long Beach?
When we got to Long Beach, the Crips and the Bloods was there. BC Boys took the stage, did their show, starting to get fights, and then there's a fight back there. When Houdini hit the stage, Run DMC and LL never got to perform. It was a gang fight. It was a gang show over.
During the show?
During the show.
Wow.
During the show.
Crips and Bloods?
Crips and Bloods.
Damn, man.
1986, Long Beach, California.
Wow.
So, you know, that night, every news station, hip-hop is bad. Boom, boom. The next morning, me and Jay had to do all the morning. Run got sick and wanted to go home. He was just, oh, my God, what's happening? We're over now. So me and Jay, all we had to do, though, was go on the news to all the journalists. We kind of shut it down like Michael Jordan did with gambling. Yeah, I gamble, so what? Yeah. Can't answer no questions.
That's right. Yeah, you
remember
to.
He called the press conference for ESPN. Yes, I'm Michael Jordan, I'm gamble, next question. Now the hype is over. Remember
right.
He did that? So me and Jay go on here and said, we just want to say this. The conditions that caused that gang fight exist everywhere. You could go to London with the hooligans. If the two rival cities get there, they're going to fight. A high school football team. We settle it on the football field. But if high school A and high school B, the students seeing them, meeting them all you got to do a few words, it's going to be some fight. But we said this. Run DMC, BC Boys, LL Cool J, Houdini. Check the music.
Mm-hmm.
There's not one reference of violence. There's no profanity. There's no disrespecting women. There's no talk. Check the music. So I guess people had, oh, there's nothing on this record.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there's not. The 50 shows before this.
Right. No problems.
So the next day, we have more press there waiting to see what's going on. So that's really why we got to cover Rolling Stone.
Because
now, not only are they did this rap thing, it's kind of ill, too.
That's right.
But that's what put us right there. You know what I'm saying?
Did you guys, obviously your biggest fame was in America. How did you translate into a worldwide audience? Did you do a lot of international touring?
Yeah, yeah. In the early years, I think we went over to our first touch of overseas was Japan and London.
Okay, wow.
And when we first went to London, we played to a place called, there was a place, a venue called there in the 80s called Hammersmith Odeon.
Yeah, yeah. Still there. Hammersmith Odeon. Yeah.
Yeah. Legendary concerts then.
Yeah, absolutely.
Legendary, you got to come back. Selling out legends. So once they knew, whoa, Run DMC played Hammersmith Odeon, sold out every time they came, Run DMC and the Beasties. So now we got to go to France.
Mm-hmm.
Now we got to go over to Belgium.
Yeah, now the promoters want you to come, right? Yeah, here
exactly.
He is. Yeah.
Then we went the same thing when we went over to Japan. You know, the thing that was cool with Japan, when we went over to Japan is very culturally enthusiastic about cultures where, you know, you might see a dread Japanese, but they're not pretending.
Yeah.
They embrace the culture.
Right.
They embraced rock and roll. They embraced jazz. They embraced... We went over there, and the jazz bands and jazz clubs was better than ones in New York City. So they embraced the culture. But the other thing with Japan is fashion. It's their style, they're very visual and colorful. So the whole graffiti and the way we was dressing, when we got to Japan, not only it was the new rap music thing that was just rebellious and so of flavor, our look in Japan was like, what? Kango hats, the DMC glasses, the gold chain, the
I'm sure they're all wearing it.
But no late ride.
Yeah, that's right.
So they embraced us, you know, in London, in Europe, it was just about the music.
Uh-huh.
You know, and what was good about in Europe, it was, even though these dudes are sampling the rock music, they could play with the rock guys, mm-hmm, too. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So even over there, we was doing shows that... there's a band in Germany called Blitzkrieg, Third Reich. There's a band in Germany, a huge rock band in Germany, that was huge in the 80s. It was opening for all of them.
But really?
It was, yeah, yeah. So it became a thing where this rap thing is good live. So, you know what?
Because it's heavy, too, though. That's the thing. There's a heavy element to rap where you can really feel it, you know?
Yeah.
It's got that same aggression.
Truth be told, we have more fun in Europe than... in the state.
Well, let's talk about, I was going to mention that. I mean, you were talking about how you're basically a young guy. You're in your 20s, mid-20s.
Man.
How was it to be so huge? Did you fall into the trappings of
sex, drugs, and rock and roll?
Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Sex, drugs, and rap and roll.
All of it. Yeah, sex, drugs, and rap and roll for us. Yes.
Yes.
But, you know, the reason why people really don't know about it was we knew not to put those images and concepts on our record.
Mm-hmm.
But... our parties was better than Jay-Z's and Diddy's combined.
You heard it here.
Let me just say that. But once we started noticing, yo, they wearing the glasses like you, D. They wearing the sneakers like us, y'all. They want to wear the clothes like us. We just knew Jay would always say, yo, we got to think about the young ones.
Mm-hmm.
So if we go and smoke our weed and do our drinking, it's in the dressing room. It's on the bus. We ain't going to be like these other guys.
Right, on
we
stage.
We don't want to. I mean, if the kids going to do it, they're going. But we don't want to be part of that influence.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
A lot of our music was, I'm DMC and a place to be. I go to St. John's University. Wycliffe, you know, Wycliffe John of Fugees, he said, yo, DMC is the only MC that can sing about Christmas time in Hollis, chicken and collard greens, Adidas sneakers, and St. John's University and make a gangster. So we kind of knew, but behind the scenes, put it like this, from 85 to 90 was
crazy time.
Yeah.
Did it ever stick with you? I mean, did you have any issues where you had to, like, you don't drink now anymore?
I don't drink. Yeah, I've been sober since 2004.
Gotcha.
Now, the crazy thing that happened to me was I used to drink a case of 40 ounces a day.
Ooh. Wow.
A day.
Just from a calorie standpoint. Never mind.
Yeah. A case a day. And then go out at night and drink Jack Daniels, Jim Beam, Bacardi and Coke. This and that. So eventually it caught up to me. In 1991, I had a case of acute pancreatitis.
Mm.
I went into the doctor with the worst pain ever. And the doctor said this to me. He said, you know, you drink beer and stuff like that? Yeah, I drink. He said, how many six packs? I said, I don't just drink six packs. Well, what do you drink? 40 ounces. You know, one or two. No, I drink a case a day. They was like, admit him. Admit nurse. IV. I was on an IV for a month and a half.
Wow.
I didn't take none orally.
Yeah.
And they said, yo, you're lucky because your pancreas and your liver wasn't damaged.
Wow. Well, that actually happened to Duff McKagan, a good friend of mine from Guns N' Roses. His pancreas exploded. And he woke up in the hospital like you were dead.
What a Duff's pancreas exploded.
And that's why Duff now, he's a health nut. He's all skinny.
I
looks
saw
great.
Him, right. I did a Camp Freddy event
that's
with
right.
him.
That's why.
I did a Camp Freddy.
Next time you see him, mention it to him because his
really?
Went all the way and blew up, man.
Wow.
So that could have been
so
you.
Right,
you did
been.
The right thing. How was it for Run DMC in the 90s then? I mean, obviously you guys had the kind of the golden age of that,
the
beginning
90s.
Of rap. Was it?
It was changing for us.
Changing, yeah.
The only thing that we held on, the only thing that kept us alive was our live stage show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, other rappers now and even then, they had a hit record that people remembered.
Yeah.
But it was just something about how music was. It's just constant. It's different.
Yeah.
No matter what came, gangster rap came, Vanilla Ice came, Pama came. But even, you know, the groups like De La Soul, Tribe Called Quest.
Yeah, PM Dawn.
PM Dawn. Remember how first it was just, then Tupac and Biggie came. Even though we wasn't on radio anymore, and we wasn't mainstream on MTV, the only thing, even if you thought, I thought they been broke up. When we showed up live, we did It's Tricky, Walk This Way, King of Rock, and My Adidas, it was like, whoa.
You had a set list, like, hit after hit
after
hit.
But during that time, we got lost in the sauce. Because, I mean, even when Public Enemy came out, and Eric B. and Rakim, and the Beasties, License to Ill, the Beastie was going into the venue, and it was cool, because the Beasties was able to transition, because you know what really we should have did? We should have transitioned to...
That's right. That's what Beasties did. When they did Check Your Head and they started playing instruments and went back to that funk, that punk roots.
They were that.
Yeah.
We never had that.
Right.
So we kind of got lost in the sauce.
Let's talk about... I mean, you mentioned a couple times. I mean, the very mysterious death of Jam Master Jay.
Yeah.
You could probably tell the story better than I can. What exactly happened? Do we know?
Well, we was on... the crazy thing was... We went through that whole 90s period.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 93, Pete Rock, the producer, world-renowned hip-hop producers, one of the top five producers of all times, he did the record Down With The King for us, which kind of brought us back. We went on a Family Values tour with Limp Bizkit.
Oh, wow. Okay.
We started getting calls again.
Well, you went on tour with Aerosmith.
We did. Yeah. Aerosmith calls us up.
Yeah.
Oh, shoot. We forgot about that.
Right.
When they came out, they went and got a $40 million
deal. Oh, yeah. Well, then it was hit after hit after hit after
hit.
Then
they did the ballad for the space movie. Oh.
For Armageddon. I don't want to miss a thing.
Remember
that?
Yeah, man. Oh, man.
That's what I'm saying. We missed that part. You're right. You kicked off Aerosmith. Because after Walk This Way, Permanent Vacation, and there was Pump, and there was Get a Grip, and there was Armageddon.
It was amazing.
It was hit. They became massive. You know?
And, speaking on that, before I talk about that, but the album that they had after Walk This Way, dude, they had those records, but like I said, nobody was going.
No one was going to touch it. That's right. Like, dude Looks Like a Lady was after that. Yeah.
We was a perfect marketing plan.
That's right.
So during that time, during that 90s time, you know, Aerosmith is doing the big, they're back to that Guns N' Roses level where Guns N' Roses opened for them.
That's right.
And then pushed them out the way and became.
Yeah.
Somebody told me at one time Guns N' Roses was the biggest band in the world.
I think 93 they were. 92,
the world,
93,
like, wow.
Yeah.
So absolutely. Aerosmith is back to that now.
Yeah.
Aerosmith's being talked about more than the Stones at this time.
You're right.
The Stones
absolutely
kept touring every year.
Yeah.
Aerosmith was everywhere,
yeah,
especially with the space movie and all that. So we get a call from Aerosmith. We want to do a tour. We want to do Aerosmith headlining, Run DMC opening, with Kid Rock in the middle.
Oh, yeah.
We just want to do half the tour like this. You know, just to show people, now y'all remember this.
Yeah.
The tour started going so well. It was like, we got to add y'all to all the dates. It was during the break. We took the break. We did like probably 20 shows. We was only supposed to do 20. They was doing like 40 dates. We was only supposed to do the first half of the tour. You know, the cities that we're, you know, New York,
Philly,
Chicago,
yeah.
Philly. Oh, shit, they got running the winner. So we take the break. We come off the road. And I'm home. We home. We were supposed to go do, because Run DMC, once Aerosmith did this with us, all the promoters started calling. Could you come do the basketball game? Could you do halftime of the football game?
Gotcha.
Hey, Limp Bizkit was calling. Yo, DMX can't do what we want y'all. Everybody's calling us again. So we get a call to go do the basketball halftime show in D.C. for the NBA. And Eric, he was with us. You know, he calls, yo, we got this gig, cool. And we get money. Thank you, Pete Rock. You saved our career. Thank you, Aerosmith. And it's basically, okay, Eric's like, we'll see y'all in the morning. So I, you know, pack my bag. I'm laying at 10 o'clock news. Channel 5, Channel 9, Channel 11 in New York. Turn to Channel 5 news. This just said, Jam Master Jay of rap group Run DMC shot. Yeah, whatever. Because during the Raising Hell tour in 86, we were so huge, it was a rumor, Jay's dead.
Oh.
I don't know. I mean, every night, we on front, we look, we Rolling Stone,
yeah,
walked this Adidas deal.
Yeah.
just rumored Jay's dead.
Yeah,
somebody,
yeah.
It wasn't even internet. It was just Jay's dead. Because we were so big.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, whatever. Turn to Channel 9. This just in, Jam Master Jay run the MC shop. Yeah, whatever. Turn to Channel 11. Jam Master Jay run the MC shop. Whatever. So now I'm thinking, okay. They show Jay's studio. So I'm thinking this. Of course, he's the star. Somebody did get shot in it, but not Jay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's just like, I'm looking, okay, yeah, somebody probably did get shot. Jay's studio was 5 minutes from where we grew up.
Mm-hmm.
By the bus terminal, somebody gets shot. Turn it back to now, never. Now Channel 7 is picking up on it. Now Channel 2 is, yes. Now NBC is picking up on it. Still don't believe it. His daughter calls me, crying, his daughter Erica. I can't even hear what she's saying. They killed. That's when I knew it was serious. Hop in my car, me and my wife hop in my car. I was living in Jersey at the time. We jet to Queens to Jay's studio. Two people I saw, Ed Lover from Ed Lover and Dr.
Yeah,
Dre,
yeah, yeah.
And Chuck D, a public enemy, never seen this before, bawling, crying. That's when I knew it was true.
So what happened?
I don't know. I describe it like this. People always ask me, you know, when I go to speak at high schools, I do a lot of speaking about the positive things about
hip-hop. Right, right, right.
And I always get a little smaller, like, kid, DMC. Y'all guys never glorified violence. Y'all only cursed on 2 records. Y'all were always a positive group. What do you got to say about Jay dying? You know, it wasn't like Pac and Biggie. We never had no beef.
Mm-hmm,
we never
mm-hmm,
even projected yeah. that. Jay's studio was 5 minutes from where he grew up. He could have had his studio in Manhattan.
Anywhere.
Around the corner from That's Diddy's right. studio, from Daddy's house, from Buffy's studio.
Yeah.
He could have had his studio in sunny California down the block at around the corner from Dr. Dre's.
Yeah.
His studio was 5 minutes from where he grew up. He made it out. He said, let me go back and bring my neighborhood through the same door I came through.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no evidence. Without evidence, there's no case. There's suspects, but without evidence, there's no case. But I look at it like this. I always say this, and people say, wow, that's deep, D. You know, for what we did with our music, we knew it was able to influence and inspire. I'm not particularly mad at the guy that shot Jay in the head. I'm mad at the mentality mm-hmm. that would cause him. The very thing Jay made it for. Yo, you could come, man. You could be the studio. You could be the engineer. Jay was this type of guy. You could be the engineer. Because everybody wants to say, Chris, you know this. I want to sing, and I want to drum, and I want to rap. And then you listen to him.
Yeah.
And I don't never disrespect anybody. I'll go, right, is there right, anything right. else you could do?
Yeah.
Some of the guys that wanted to be rappers wound up being great video directors.
Mm-hmm.
So Jay
sure,
would
of course.
Be the guy that, yo, I can't sign you to a record deal, but you could come intern at the studio, learn the board. That's a career, too. So Jay was that dude. So he had those elements that he was fighting against. That one person didn't respect that.
And this is, he was in the studio
his
tracking
studio
or whatever.
With people he knew.
And guy came in, shot him, and ran away?
Shot him in the head, ran away. Now, the only thing that I could say, what's the relation about that? Jay was kind of fortunate because whoever did it had to wait for Jay to come off the tour.
Because
mm-hmm. he's on the, raising,
on the Aerosmith tour, yeah.
So, dang, the guy shot Jay. I live here. I work every day. It probably was one, your wife and kids is on the block.
Mm.
But the crazy thing is, I got all the OGs and even young Gs. Man, when we find out who did it, because you don't shoot Jay, you shoot.
Yeah, sure.
I got dudes, I'm dropping dime. When you let me find out, when I hear who did it, I'm dropping down.
Yeah.
Because you don't shoot Jay because of what Run DMC stood for.
Uh-huh.
But I have no
never
idea.
Found out.
It's crazy. And it's, you know, it's weird when, you know, you hear. And for our culture, I understood what all those people felt when Morrison died.
Yeah.
When Hendrix died. When Kurt died.
Yeah.
I went through that. I was like, wow, whoa. I know what that feels like.
So was that basically the end of Run DMC at that point?
As a group.
You couldn't see yourself getting another guy? Or
trying to put it like this. Oh, we always ask people, you want to see me and Run? You want to see these two guys now trying to do what those three guys did together?
Mm. Yeah.
No, we can't even attempt to do it. Now, if you could see, like, we did Jay-Z's Made in America.
Mm-hmm.
We did Fun Festival in Austin, Texas. And we just...
So you have done live performances.
We'll show up at Coachella.
So who,
but it won't be, yo, Run DMC. No.
Right.
We saw Run and D do a show at...
Yeah. You're not saying Run DMC. I gotcha.
We can't replace our drum.
It's interesting.
That's right. David Grohl started the Foo Fighters.
Yeah, I totally get it.
We can't.
It'd be like, you know, if Geddy Lee died, you can't just get another guy in Rush. It's like, that's the trio. Every guy is just important. Nirvana,
right,
same thing.
Change it.
Police, the same thing.
Right.
Run DMC.
See, and people's like, man, you could now. But
no,
now
I get it.
People give us this too. Now, from a rap standpoint, we could.
Mm-hmm.
But so many people say, yeah, but Run DMC meant to us so much more than music.
Yes.
From a music standpoint, people say, man, look, y'all could go get DJ Jazzy Jeff from Jazzy Jeff from the Fresh yeah. Prince, Terminator X, or Mixmaster Mike from the Beasties.
Yeah.
And we could go do a tour with all the DJs from all the groups we inspired, but it won't be.
Well, let me tell you a perfect example of this, and you'll totally get this. Mm-hmm. I had Jason Bonham on my show, John Bonham's son. And he was telling me that Led Zeppelin did the big reunion back in 07 at the O2. And everyone was like, Zeppelin's
oh,
got
right.
a tour. Got
to arena in London.
Yes, just one show for Ahmet Erdogan.
They really did?
They did. And afterwards, Jason asked Robert Plant, are we going to do more of this? And he said, listen, Jason, I love you. You're the perfect replacement and the only guy that could ever replace your father. But you're still not John Bonham. And I cannot do Led Zeppelin without my friend John Bonham with me. That's why Led Zeppelin will never tour again, because you can't just get another drummer. You can't just get another DJ. It's more than just being able to go, you know what I mean?
Right.
So,
wow, that's real.
It's heavy, right? So you've done a lot of solo stuff. Your new record, Rock Solid,
uh-huh.
came out, and,
yes.
and that's just the DMC
yeah,
record.
Yeah, what I'm trying to do is, like you said when we started this, we didn't create it. It was already there, but
yeah.
when Run DMC and Aerosmith, when Steve knocked down their wall.
Yeah.
Limp Bizkit, Korn, Linkin Park,
okay, well, yeah,
Kid
tons.
Rock. It was already there. They were already doing it.
Yeah.
But then they did it with attitude. They didn't have to live up to any expectations. What I'm trying to do with my new music is this. I can still do what I did, but the presentation has to be different. And the beautiful thing about this, and I'm going to admit this right now, when I perform with a live band and I do Rock Box, not with the DJ playing
yeah.
the racket, with a real drummer, real bass, and a real guitar, it's a whole nother level.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a different interpretation
sure.
of everything you love. So the thing that they say Run DMC created, we never, ever participated in that. I do a lot of shows with the band Jackal.
Full okay.
Throttle Saloon,
oh,
Jesse
yeah.
James, the
yeah.
Pre-Chain. Those are my boys.
Yeah.
We do a lot of shows. I did Sturgis with them and stuff like that. And we was in Upper Michigan, like up by
yeah.
that wilderness area.
Yeah, almost up by Canada, almost.
Yeah, but we was up there, and the program director was like, "Yo, man, you know I would love to see Rock Box and Tricky." I'm sitting there because I do when I play with Jackal, we do Tricky and Walk This Way with that.
Oh, Jackal playing. That's cool.
It's hard. It's, and Jesse doing, what? Jesse does Tricky with me. Hey, it's Tricky to Rock. It's bourbon. It's, oh my God. It's the best. It's a different interpretation.
Yeah.
And all those dudes in their audience, you know, they're 22 bikers to 70. Man, when I was a kid, man, I don't like that rap music, but y'all changed. It's the most beautiful thing in the world. So what I'm trying to do now, the program director said, man, I would love to see the records that y'all did live.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what made me say, okay, if I'm going to continue to be me, how do I recreate myself without just bugging out
yeah.
and doing something? People want to see me do that.
Yeah, want to see you rap.
But they don't want to see me still DJ turntable with a new dude that's not running.
Yeah.
So I just want to do what Rage Against the Machine does every night. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
Tom
yeah.
Morello's like, yo, because of you. Travis Barker.
Yeah, from Blink-182.
Yeah, he told me, man, not Walk This Way. He told me, man, when I heard Rock Box, and I thought of it, he said, man, all the metal kids tell me, man,
yeah.
I was listening to Metallica, and when we heard y'all, then that's what made us do that.
Yeah.
So I just want to, you know what, here's this easy answer to that. I'm really trying to be the king of rock right now. But I want to give a tribute to live music.
Sure, sure.
because I love it.
Last question. If you had to choose one Run DMC song that stands out, like, this is my favorite DMC song, could you do it? Run DMC song? One that pops in your head?
It's tricky.
Yeah.
It's tricky. Like, it's hard to not say Walk This Way. But Walk This Way was...
It's your tune, but it's not your tune.
Right.
It's your tune, but it's theirs too.
Tricky. Yeah. You know why I chose Tricky?
Why?
Because the kids. I was in a supermarket, and the mother flipping out over me. The daughter probably was like maybe 13, 14 years old. Mommy, who's that? Leave me alone, Sabrina. Leave me. You know, the mother's flipping over. The daughter never seen her mother do that. Mommy, who's that? Sabrina, leave me. Then the mother yells, Run DMC. And the daughter gets this puzzled look on her face. Mommy, who? And the mother just turns to the daughter and goes, It's Tricky, White Chicks. It was over. Yeah, the daughter pushed the mother out the way. Oh, my God, Mr. DMC, I love that song. So Adam Sandler will not do a movie and not put Tricky
that's right.
These road trip
that's right, man.
Movies. They keeping us alive.
Run DMC is iconic. Rock and Roll Hall of Famers. And I'll tell you this. Last year when we first met at a red carpet event for WrestleMania, it was like a hurricane benefit thing. There was a lot of people there, but the one guy I had to get a picture with was DMC. I've been excited to have you. I'm glad we were able to do this face-to-face. New record is Rock Solid. That's DMC's jams.
But what, the new single, that's the first single of the new album. The new single now is Static X, Wayne Static.
Okay, yeah.
You could go to YouTube, see the video. But when the album drops in August, here's the first single. And I'm really going at the Run DMC thing hard. The first single is DMC rapping, Sebastian Bach from Skid Row on vocals, Mick Marsh from Motley Crue on guitar, and Travis Barker on drums.
That's a rock and roll supergroup, man.
That's really a Motley Crue.
Literal. Yeah. And we're looking forward to the DMC comic book. So much stuff going on, dude. It's been a pleasure to have you here.
No, it's an honor to sit here.
Absolute pleasure.
This is like crazy. My son is so jealous. He couldn't come because he had to work. I said, I'm doing an interview with Chris today. He's like, what? Daddy, please kill us. I said, no, you got to be responsible, son.
That's right. Do your work, son.
You know, yeah, exactly. But this
just
is
like
honor,
that.
Man.
My pleasure, man. Thank you so much.
It's a great opportunity.
My pleasure, dude. Thank you so much, Dean. Thanks to DMC Daryl McDaniels of Run DMC. Amazing, amazing guest. What a conversation. I learned so much about rap music and such a cool guy. He came into my hotel room specifically to do that interview after I met him. I met him years ago, but after I knew he was going to be at the St. Louis Wizard Comic Con. His first issue of his new comic book, DMC, is coming out on October 29th. Go find that. It's available on Amazon and online. Go check it out. It's a great, great book. Also, my new book, The Best in the World at What I Have No Idea, is also out now. Come see me and get a signed copy. I listed the dates where I'm going to be earlier in the show. New York City, Ridgewood, New Jersey, Staten Island, all the way over to Seattle, Dallas, Tampa. If you're around those areas, go back and listen to the show earlier. Hey, listen, I wouldn't be doing all these great things if it wasn't for you. Thanks for following me through Fozzy, through the WWE, reading my books, and listening to this show. And I wouldn't be doing this show at all if not for you guys downloading it twice a week, every week. And if also not for my Sexy Beast sponsors who help us pay for the production costs of doing this for you for free. If you want to help support the show, you know what you got to do. Easiest way is to do your online shopping through my Amazon links. Easy to find. Just go to podcastone.com. Click on the Keep Our Podcasts Free banner at the top of the page. Then click on Talk is Jericho and you see all three of my Amazon links, UK, USA, and Canada A. Every time you do that, Amazon kicks back a little cash to the show so we can keep doing this for you for free for twice a week. No extra fees or hidden charges. You're just getting your shopping done and you're helping me out in the process. Okay, we had Daryl McDaniels on from DMC. I had much respect for what rap is. Didn't really know much about it until we had a guy called Bone Crusher lay down some tracks on a song we did way back in 2005 on the All That Remains album. It was called It's a Lie, and what we wanted to do, Rich and I, is combine a rock singer, a rapper, and a soul singer all in the same song. Bonecrusher came in to the studio, listened to the riff. We had no ideas for him. He listened to it two or three times. He wrote melodies and lyrics on the spot. Then he doubled it on the spot. He was in and out in about 20 minutes, and it was pure genius at work. I want to play this for you all the way back from the All That Remains record. This is It's a Lie featuring Bonecrusher to finish off T.I.J.
Are you scared? Are you scared? Because they live off your pain and you live off your struggle. Are you scared? You scared? Because they live off your pain and you live off your struggle. Are you scared? You scared? Because they live off your pain and you live off your struggle. Are you scared? Are you scared? Are you scared?
The radio you speak to millions that you claim to teach, minions never out of reach. Propaganda brings.
See it's on now. Yeah. See it's on now. What? See it's on now. Take them to the pit now. See it's on now. See it's on now. Like it's called draw bits for the soul now.
It's a lie.
I just stop and say before you get stuck there.
It's a lie.
Take it to the blow. This nigga talk me hard, but he ain't talk no more. Put his own to the next and your ass out the door. I'm gonna take it to the blow. Tell him, take it to the blow. This nigga talk me hard, but he ain't talking no more. I'm gonna take him to the blow. Tell him, take him to the blow. Bitch, talk me hard, but he ain't talking no more.
Speak the quips you quote. You never write the speech you note. If they can view, then they can vote. Sincerity that you know.
I ain't taking this shit no more. Street. I ain't taking this shit no more. I ain't taking this shit no more. I ain't taking this shit no more.
It's a lie.
I just stop and say before you get stuck.
We'll be right back.
great tune. I love the dichotomy of all the different vocals. Bone Crusher was the man. DMC was the man. And you are the men and the women. Thank you so much for listening to the show. That's it. Another edition of Talk is Jericho. In the meantime and in between time, stay hard, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs. We will see you on Friday. We're going to talk to Justin Roberts, WWE ring announcer, who was just recently let go. And The Miz, we had a great conversation, and you are going to love it. And you're going to get a hint as to what kind of guy Justin is. He's a very, very cool guy, and I wanted to introduce him to you, the Talk is Jericho fans. You hear all this on Friday. We'll see you then, and a big yeah, boy!
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at PodcastOne.com. That's PodcastOne.com.